You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio, 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, March 9th, 2017.
I've had a lot of people that work with the bar or that are regulars of ours tell me that they've had slurs thrown at them out windows recently on campus and downtown.
The co-owner of Backdoor Nightclub speaks with Michael Gleb on this episode of Big Talk, coming up later in the show.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks about Indiana's opioid epidemic. But first, these local headlines.
The State Board of Education has denied the request for a waiver from Seven Oaks Classical School in Ellettsville. The school was seeking a waiver to waive the state requirement for the number of full-time staff with official Indiana teaching licenses. The new school wants to allow up to half its teachers to work in their positions without licenses, according to the Herald Times. According to Indiana law, 90% of charter school full-time teachers must hold a license or be in the process of obtaining one. Since August, the Indiana Department of Education has been working with Seven Oaks to guarantee teachers meet license requirements. The Herald Times reports that only 36% of the school's full-time teachers have acquired a permit. In order to open last fall, the board's licensing office issued emergency permits for their uncertified teachers. The waiver denial means Seven Oaks must increase their selectivity when hiring more teachers. The school's headmaster, Stephen Shipp, said that waiver denial was unfortunate, but they will still move forward accordingly.
If you plan to travel on West 17th Street east of North Crescent Road tomorrow, you should expect delays, according to I-69 Development Partners. Traffic is restricted to one lane to allow utility work on the roadway. The work is expected to take place between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. tomorrow, Friday, March 10th. Work also occurred in that area today.
The Bloomington Plan Commission got its first look at a proposed apartment complex that would surround the downtown Fifth Third Bank on Washington Street. The site plan calls for 2 four-story buildings that would have apartments ranging from studios to 5-bedroom units. Tim Culver with Studio 3 Design said the project would benefit the city.
We're saving and reusing an existing structure. Quite frankly, we could hit some of these goals easier tearing it down and putting up a building in its footprint. We're saving existing jobs by keeping that structure and keeping the bank at its current location. We are adding potential jobs with the retail space at the corner of Washington and 3rd. We're adhering to the downtown vision by salvaging both existing facilities and infilling with underutilized areas and lots with higher density housing. We're providing a range of housing for studios to 5-bedroom units, 100% of which are handicap accessible.
Culver said bringing more residents to the downtown means more business for downtown business owners. Commissioners expressed concern, though, over the project's height, plans for back-end angle parking, and whether there will be more affordable housing included. Commission member Isabel Piedmont-Smith broached the topic of affordable housing with developer Elliot Lewis.
With this petition, has there been any discussion with the administration about including affordable housing?
Yeah, I was curious why you were bringing that up.
Because the administration has been discussing it with most developers that have brought petitions forward in the last year.
We've not been given any marching orders. We've not been told what to put in or how many.
Has the administration reached out to you to initiate discussions on the topic?
No, I reached out to them. And I think that it's probably worth mentioning that the territory that we're discussing right now is probably subject to a pretty good legal attack. There's 3 different fronts where this may be found to be unlawful. Obviously, we're not talking about going down that path. We think we'll meet all the requirements, and that'll be that.
Lewis went on to press Piedmont Smith for details about the city's affordable housing policies.
Are you making that a requirement?
No, I'm not ready to make anything a requirement.
Okay.
I think that it should be an item to be considered, however. Whenever there's a request for variances, I look at affordable housing as a public benefit that could be provided.
Is there an ordinance that's we're supposed to look at for this?
No.
Is there any law or ordinance that have been passed that
no,
we should be looking
negotiation.
At?
No, it's negotiation. It's negotiation between the administration. The developer wants to have variances to our normal rules of how we do business, and the Plan Commission and the administration might request something in return.
Later in the meeting, several commission members, including Les Coyne, expressed concern about the height of the buildings.
I would not be willing at this point without a lot more information to give away that variance without understanding its impact further on and the existing situation with variances and relative to the ordinance and controls height variances.
Commission member Nick Kappas said he was concerned that the project would set a precedent for height that would not be compatible with larger area. The issue in back-end parking spaces can only be settled by the City Council. City Planner Andrew Sebor said the City Council will see a proposed ordinance addressing back-end angle parking in the near future.
Monroe County Democrats have re-elected Mark Fraley as the party's chairman. Fraley has served as the local Democratic Party's chair since 2015. With the new leadership team, he calls for unity in rebuilding the party.
We're operating under a new political environment, and Trump has in some ways brought out the worst in people, but also a lot of the best in people, because people are responding like never before. And we are getting a lot of requests, a lot of people who want to be able to volunteer, a lot of people who want to be able to knock on doors, a lot of people who want to guarantee Democratic success in 2018 and beyond.
The Democratic Party has been working together with volunteers and activist groups to build a plan for action. Fraley says he has a number of goals for the party.
Number one, translate the expressive energy of protest into the practical tedium of governance. Number two, develop a strong communications platform that can enable us to be able to push back not only against the abuses of the state and national GOP, but also to articulate the successes of local Democrats. And finally, to ramp up our fundraising efforts so that we've got more capacity to be able to engage in Democratic successes in the future.
The caucus also elected Monroe County Treasurer Jessica McClellan as vice chair. City of Bloomington Innovation Director Tom Miller as secretary, and Democracy for Monroe County Vice Chair Kaisa Goodman as treasurer. All statewide caucus reorganizations will take place this month. Fraley and McClellan are eligible to vote for party officers of the 9th District, who will elect the Indiana State Democratic Party chair.
A House bill affecting senior citizen services in Indiana passed out of a Senate committee yesterday with an 8-0 vote. The bill affects an Indiana program called CHOICE, which has been around since 1987, to provide long-term services and support to individuals who are at risk of being sent to a nursing home or assisted living community. Those who currently qualify for CHOICE can receive up to $500,000 of assets. The House bill would cut that number nearly in half, offering $270,000 in assets. Currently, those who qualify for the program must be at least 60 years old, an Indiana resident, unable to perform two or more activities of daily living, and must have applied and be found ineligible for Medicaid. The current qualifications are not expected to change.
And last week, we told you about a proposed $1 cigarette tax increase in Indiana. But just a few hours ago, the leader of the Indiana House says he's willing to back down a little bit. Since the increase was endorsed by the House, the Associated Press reports several tobacco and convenience store trade groups have expressed opposition, along with many Republicans in the state Senate. Opponents argue the increase would only hurt businesses by driving smokers to cross the state lines to buy cheaper cigarettes. Republican House Speaker Brian Bosma responded by saying he's willing to take the increase down to about 60 cents. This is one of the several tax increases that the House Republicans have proposed this week to pay for infrastructure plans. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service. Now offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. For more information on Smithville's home automation service, visit smithvillesecurity.com.
Co-owner and arts and entertainment director of Bloomington's LGBTQ-friendly nightclub, The Back Door, Nikki B. found her home here when she was embraced by this town's queer community. In today's changing political climate for queer folks, Nikki hopes to provide a safe, comfortable place for people of all gender and sexuality nonconformance. With business partner Smoove G., she runs what might be Bloomington's premier home away from home for people of countless outsider descriptions. Nikki B. joins Michael Glab in this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Talk, Big Mike here. My guest today, Nikki B. She's the co-owner and arts and entertainment director of The Back Door. Now that's Bloomington's LGBTQ-friendly nightclub and bar. Thanks for coming in, Nikki.
Thanks for having me, Big Mike.
You know, it's been 48 years since Stonewall. Do today's lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, queer, and all the rest kids even know what Stonewall was?
This new generation of actual, like, kids, like high school kids, know a lot about queer history and are light years ahead of where I was 20 years ago when I was in high school. But as far as, like, the generation that's in college right now, it's really hit or miss as well as far as if people know their history or not. Some of them, like, really do, and there's a huge activist faction that are part of the bar, and then there's some people that are blissfully oblivious to the struggles that our people have been through over the past 50 years and before. But I think that movie, that terrible movie Stonewall that came out a year or two ago, really pushed the conversation, because a lot of people, including some older folks that I know, like much older folks that I know, were like, finally, our story is coming out. And I'm like, this is not your story.
Wow.
I was like, it's a whitewashed version of what happened there. And so that kind of really, really pushed the conversation and made everybody investigate and interrogate what that action was, how long it took, who was involved, which, for folks that don't know, was credited with being incited by two trans women of color, Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera. There's a number of other people involved, of course. But yeah, so sometimes, you know, terrible pop culture can also kind of incite the riot in new ways.
Well, you know, I want to ask you, can a person run a queer nightclub and not be political?
Well, I think choosing not to be political when your identity is politicized is a political statement. It's complacency, which is really dangerous, I think. It really leads to marginalization of folks within your community and reinforces power structures, patriarchal power structures, authoritarian power structures that are already in place. That people think, oh, it's a safe space. And then it's like, no, who is it a safe space for? Because if you aren't being political, you are ostracizing someone. You have to have radical inclusivity in this day and age. Otherwise, somebody's going to get thrown under the bus.
Wow. Now, I discovered from Fox 59 News this factoid. Bloomington has the fifth largest population per capita of same-sex households in the nation. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. No,
didn't know that.
Fifth largest.
Okay, is this a queer friendly town?
Oh yeah,
it is.
Yeah. I forget that actually until I travel pretty much anywhere, and forget like that I can walk down the street with my girlfriend and hold hands and smooch in public and talk about queer things in public, and people don't really bat an eye. Whereas anywhere else I go, including when I go home to Atlanta, it feels different.
But Atlanta is the queer center of the South.
It's still the South.
Well, that says something, yeah.
And you know, like, I mean, like any major city, like, you're going to have your pockets where you don't have to worry as much. But I think as far as, like, having an entire town that is kind of down with the cause, and that isn't to say that we don't have bigots here. We certainly do. But it is it is a place where I forget how easy I can breathe.
Today, in March 2017, in Bloomington, on the street, if you want to kiss your girlfriend...
I wouldn't think anything of it.
Not a thing?
Not a thing.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I think people, anyone with a marginalized identity always has the corner of their eye. You know, the peripheral vision is always going on for somebody. You know, you wait for that energy to come around the corner that makes you think, oh, maybe I shouldn't do this right now. But that happens much less here than it does anywhere else.
Now, how important is it for a young college student, perhaps from a more restrictive small town, to come to school here in Bloomington and find a place like yours where she or he can find other people who've grappled with identity and orientation? How important is that?
Oh, it's paramount. The only thing that I regret is that, you know, because we serve alcohol in the state of Indiana, that we can only cater to folks 21 and over.
Yeah.
And that's something that we've got Rhinos, which is a great resource, and Prism Youth Community, which is those young people are brilliant. And so, you know, I really miss like Rachel's Cafe or like, you know, we need, I think, especially right now and with just how kind of scary everything is that we need community spaces that aren't necessarily focused around alcohol, because that's also a real slippery slope, you know?
Yeah.
I think everybody in the industry kind of struggles with it. And even just when your scene is constantly about partying and booze, like that can be really fun, but that can also be really limiting and turn into problems for folks. So, but the actual like having community and having a place that you can come and not only be exposed to people that are like you, but people that are maybe not quite like you, but still have a identity that they're struggling with, and also be exposed to art is it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing.
Now let's look at this from a historical perspective. Is the climate today in the streets, in the bars, in the workplace, is it changing for the worse for LGBTQ people? Do you think it's worse?
Clarify that for me.
Well, I mean, is it harder to kiss your loved one? Is it harder to walk down the street and be obviously in your face gay, lesbian, trans, what have you?
Oh, I think that's entirely dependent on where you are and the people that are around you. You know, I mean, in Bloomington, Bloomington has not been inoculated to bigotry and prejudice. I've had a lot of people that work with the bar or that are regulars of ours tell me either, you know, personally or I've seen on Facebook that, you know, they've had slurs thrown at them out windows recently on campus and downtown. And
more than maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah, sure. People, bigots have really, really been enacted, have been, what's the word I'm looking for? Given the green light as far as letting their crap opinions loose into the world and have seen a president who has said that hating people and saying awful things is will go without punishment.
It ain't going to stop you from being the president.
And that's so dangerous.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Nikki B., co-owner and entertainment director, arts and entertainment director of The Back Door. Thanks for joining us on Big Talk today.
Thanks for having me, Big Mike.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering marketing and digital solutions for all small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing's websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and mobile user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Support also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next is our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, what should be done about the opioid addiction crisis? Opioids are powerful prescription painkillers. It is easy to become addicted to them. Often, addiction leads to HIV and hepatitis C, both diseases transmitted by contaminated needles. Recently, opioid addiction in Indiana has increased sharply to what is now considered a crisis by many. Voices has gone out into the street and asked your friends and neighbors what they would do to combat opioid addiction.
I know needle sharing programs have been helpful in other areas, and just increased probably funding for substance abuse treatment, I think, could be helpful.
Something's missing in lives that have to turn to opioids. The other thing is prescriptions. I think we need to watch over-prescribing opioids, and I know some doctors are reacting the other way now because of the epidemic, but, you know, a tough look at who's prescribing what for whom.
Yeah, maybe they're writing too much prescriptions for people who's already addicted to drugs.
I think just more people undercover, probably, trying to purchase those things from people selling them.
It's all starting at People's Park and Seminary Parks. And I asked the police, why ain't they doing anything? They said it's an upper hand thing, a higher rank than them. They shouldn't tolerate it.
It's hard to get it under control. Where I'm from in Anderson, Indiana, heroin is just running rampant. And they just, I mean, I don't think any city or any government knows what to do about it.
I think that we should probably try to figure out what the root cause of it, why it started to become more of an issue lately. I mean, 15, 20 years ago, I don't think it was quite as bad as it is now. So if we can figure out what has caused it to increase, then maybe we'd have a better idea of how to change it and how to stop it.
It sounds like it's a big problem. Free needles sound like a good idea to me, but I really haven't looked into this.
I had heard it nationwide that there was an issue surrounding that. I didn't know if there was a certain spike specifically in our community compared to the rest of the nation.
I feel like that is an extremely tough issue, and it's something that really the individual needs to come to a place where they're willing to change and wanting to accept help. But I don't think punitive measures are usually very fruitful for individuals struggling with addiction.
I mean, I think when it comes to addiction, I actually like to focus on more of what can you do that's restorative instead of disciplinary. So I would like to see more efforts to offer counseling or rehabilitation services rather than focus on cracking down on it, focusing on how can we help these people continue their lives.
A lot of the problem seems really self-inflicted. I mean, they've let an opioid crisis turn into a literal AIDS outbreak that took them months to contain through like direct failure of state policy. So I don't really know what the solution is, but stop making it worse would be a good start, probably.
Ask why the sudden resurgence in this. Why are people escaping into drugs in the first place? What's attractive? Is it because they don't have anything better to do? Is it because they don't have job opportunities? Are they feeling stifled or something? What kind of support do they need from the city government, from the community to, I don't know, give them something else to do other than just drugs? I mean, why does somebody get into drugs in the first place?
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Simon Williams and Carl Van Cleve, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street was produced by Barbara Bravosky. Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered to you directly. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
And stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show. It's coming up next here on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.